Chapter 4. The Byzantine Empire. The Beauty of Constantinople. We learned that the Roman Empire got too big for one emperor to rule all alone. So the Roman Empire was divided into two parts. The part of the Roman Empire that still had Rome in it was called the Western Roman Empire. And the rest of the empire became known as the Eastern Roman Empire. Its capital city was called Constantinople. When the barbarians flooded into the Roman Empire, the Western Roman Empire fell apart, and the Eastern Roman Empire lost land to the barbarians too. It shrank until the Eastern Roman Emperor only ruled the land near Constantinople, right around the Aegean Sea. But the Eastern Roman Empire survived. Today, we call this last surviving part of the Roman Empire the Byzantine Empire. We call its people Byzantines, and their emperor the Byzantine Emperor. The Byzantine Empire was small at first because the invaders had taken so much of its land away. But then strong, warlike emperors began to reconquer some of the land that had once belonged to Rome. Eventually, the Byzantine Empire spread all around the Mediterranean Sea. Constantinople, the capital city of the Byzantine Empire, became the biggest city in the world. It was larger and richer than Rome had ever been. Imagine that you're walking through the streets of Constantinople. The road beneath your feet is smoothly paved. The Byzantines know the Roman art of making good roads out of rock and cement. People push and jostle you from every side. There are almost 1 million people in this one city. Many of the people are dressed like Romans, in togas, white robes draped over one shoulder and belted around the middle. You pass beautiful shops selling silks, jewelry, and all kinds of food. Peaches, almonds, peanuts, grapes, fish, bowls of hot lentil soup, and cups of white kidney beans cooked with sage and onion. The smells of fruit, meat, and soup mix together and float out into the street. Suddenly, you're feeling very hungry. You don't see many children on the streets. "Where are all the children?" you ask a woman passing by. She is wearing a beautiful blue wool cloak edged with gold thread. "They're in school, of course," the woman answers. "We have schools for all children, even the poor ones. The little ones are working on their reading and writing, and the older students are reading the great books written by the Greeks and Romans. Our children have better things to do than run around in the streets. Excuse me, I've got to go. I'm a lady-in-waiting to the Empress, and I've got to get to her palace right away." "Where is the palace?" you ask. The woman laughs. "What do you mean, the palace? We have 14 palaces in Constantinople. The emperor and his court have 5. The ladies of the court have 6 more of their own, and we even have 3 palaces for people who work for the emperor. But you can't go inside them because you're just a commoner. If you want to see a beautiful building, go visit our biggest church, the Hagia Sophia. It's right up there." She points to a huge marble dome up ahead of her and hurries away. You walk towards the dome. The top of the Hagia Sophia shines bright white in the sun, and the walls glow red. The dome in the middle is surrounded by smaller domes all around it. You make your way through the main door. Sunlight is everywhere. The church has high windows all around the top of the walls, and the whole ceiling is covered with pure gold that glitters in the sun. The stones of the walls are all different colors, purple, green, crimson, and white. Columns rise up all around you. Even Rome never had a building as beautiful as this. Justinian, the Just Emperor. Powerful rulers made Constantinople great. And one of the most powerful rulers of all Byzantium was Justinian, the Just Emperor. Justinian's parents weren't important people. They were just peasants who lived hundreds of miles away from the great city of Constantinople. They grew crops and tended animals for a living. But Justinian didn't want to be a farmer. He wanted to be a great educated man. He learned how to read, and he spent every spare minute studying law, music, poetry, and religious books. He begged his family to send him to Constantinople so that he could go to school. Finally, Justinian's parents agreed. They packed his clothes and books. His mother cooked him bread and meat to eat on the journey, and Justinian began the long, long journey to the city of Constantinople. When he arrived in the city, he was overwhelmed. The buildings were the biggest he had ever seen. People swarmed everywhere, and his studies were difficult. He had to memorize 50 lines of Greek poetry every day. He had to learn how to make convincing speeches in public. The teachers at the school gave him hours of homework every day in math, music, and astronomy, the study of the stars. When he finished school, young Justinian joined the army. He was brave and full of energy, and he spent hours helping the officers keep records, order supplies, and plan their campaigns. Soon more and more people agreed Justinian would make a good emperor. When the emperor died, Justinian was named ruler of the Byzantine Empire. When Justinian became emperor, Byzantium wasn't very big yet. But Justinian decided to change that. He had read many books about the greatness and glory of the old Roman Empire, and he wanted that empire back. So Justinian recruited more and more men into his army. He set off on campaigns to reconquer the countries that used to belong to Rome: Italy, North Africa, Spain, and the countries all around the shores of the Mediterranean. He even took Rome away from the barbarians who were living there, but the war to recapture Rome destroyed what was left of the old city. Justinian was left with nothing but ruins. Did Justinian recapture all the land that used to belong to Rome? No, but he made the Byzantine Empire bigger than it had ever been before. And now that he ruled all of these different countries, Justinian had a problem. Each country had its own laws. Something that was against the law in one country might be perfectly fine in another country. A thief might be put to death in one part of the empire, but only told to pay a fine in another part. It was very confusing to rule an empire full of different laws. So Justinian set out to make one set of laws for everyone in his empire. It was a huge job. Hundreds of scholars helped him to collect all the laws of the ancient Romans and Greeks so that a new law could be written. Finally, the new set of laws, the Code of Justinian, was finished. Everyone in the Byzantine Empire was supposed to follow these laws. Here are some of the laws from the Code of Justinian. The sea and the seashore belong to everyone. Every person in my empire is allowed to go to the beach. No one can tell them, "I own this part of the beach, get off it." Rivers belong to everyone. Everyone in my empire can fish in the rivers without being told to stop. If you find a jewel or other treasure washed up on the seashore, you can keep it for yourself. You are allowed to own slaves and make them work for you without pay, but you can't beat or mistreat your slaves unless they are disobedient. A thief who steals something valuable must pay the owner 4 times what the stolen object is worth. If you are trimming a tree near a road, be sure to call out to anyone coming by, "Be careful, limbs might fall on you." If you don't call out a warning and a limb falls on a traveler and hurts him, it's your fault. But if you call out a warning and the traveler walks under your tree anyway, it isn't your fault if a limb falls on him and hurts him. He should have paid attention to your warning. When a bishop, priest, or pastor is praying or preaching, he has to speak loudly enough for everyone to hear. If he doesn't, God will punish him, and so will the emperor. Do you think these are fair laws? Would you change them? The Empress Theodora. Justinian was a powerful emperor, but he didn't rule the Byzantine Empire all alone. His wife, the Empress Theodora, was a brilliant, energetic woman who helped him make his decisions. Theodora wasn't always an empress. Her parents ran a circus at the Hippodrome, a huge arena in Constantinople. Her father was the circus bear trainer. Little Theodora used to sit in the warm sand of the arena and watch him work with his bears. Sometimes she fed the bears apples and honey to reward them for doing their tricks. When she grew a little older, Theodora got to work as a clown in the circus. She painted her face white and pretended that she couldn't speak. The audiences loved Theodora's act. Soon Theodora was acting in plays as well and attracting hundreds of fans. They came to see her shows, threw flowers to her, and applauded her performances. Theodora was a success. She got to travel all around the Byzantine Empire, staying in the best inns, eating the best food, and drinking the best wine. But one day, Theodora heard about Christianity and decided to become a Christian. "I can't go on being an actress, going to parties every night and doing whatever I please," she thought. "I need to have a different kind of life, a quiet, peaceful life." So Theodora left her job as an actress, moved to Constantinople, and became a wool spinner. She spent her days quietly making wool thread out of sheep's wool and selling it to the merchants of Constantinople. One day, Theodora was walking to the market with a basket full of yarn when she heard, "Make way! Make way for the soldiers of the royal army!" She stepped out of the street and craned her neck to see the soldiers. Justinian hadn't become the emperor yet. He was still serving in the army. So he was riding with the other soldiers, wearing a red cloak over his shining armor, with his sword hanging by his side. Theodora thought that he was the most handsome man she had ever seen. Justinian saw Theodora standing by the side of the road. "Who is that beautiful woman?" he asked the soldier beside him. The other soldiers only shrugged. "I must find out," Justinian thought to himself. "I want to know who she is at once." After a long search, Justinian found Theodora's home. He was overcome by her beauty and charmed by her intelligence. He fell in love with her and married her. And when he became the emperor, Theodora became the empress. The two of them ruled side by side, and Justinian rarely made a decision without consulting his wife. 5 years after Justinian became emperor, the people of Constantinople rioted. They wanted Justinian to get rid of two men who worked for him, two men who were very unpopular. When Justinian refused, the crowd became more and more angry. They charged through the streets of the city, overturning merchant stalls, wrecking walls, and burning buildings. They even set fire to the Hagia Sophia. They killed policemen and gathered around the emperor's palace, shouting, "Victory! Victory!" Justinian was terrified. "If they break into the palace, they'll kill us both," he exclaimed. "Let's leave Constantinople at once." "If you run away, they'll take the throne away from you," Theodora warned him. "You'll never be emperor again." "That's better than dying," Justinian retorted. "You can run if you want to," Theodora said. "You have plenty of money, and you can always sail away in the royal ships. But I never want to give up my royal purple cloak and my crown. How can someone who has once been emperor agree to become a wandering refugee? If you run away, you will soon wish that you had died instead." Finally, Theodora convinced Justinian to stay. He ordered his generals to lead the army against the rebels. The fight was long and hard, but Justinian's men won. Justinian kept his throne and rebuilt the damaged city. He made the Hagia Sophia even bigger and more beautiful than ever. And for the rest of his life, he was grateful to Theodora for keeping him in Constantinople. The empress had saved the emperor's throne. The Church in the East. After the riots that nearly frightened him out of Constantinople, Justinian ordered the burned buildings rebuilt. The Hagia Sophia, Constantinople's biggest church, had been almost completely destroyed. So Justinian decided to hire two very famous architects to design and build a new church. This new Hagia Sophia had great domes, big windows, and huge open spaces. Inside, it was decorated with paintings and mosaics. Mosaics were pictures made by arranging colored pieces into a pattern. These pieces were called tesserae. tesserae could be made out of stone, marble, glass, wood, clay, or even gold and silver. By setting the tesserae close together, artists could make beautiful patterns, and they could even make pictures of people and animals. Some mosaics were whole scenes, like a man feeding a donkey, or an emperor and his whole court. Making a mosaic was slow and careful work. First, the artist would cover the wall or ceiling with a thin layer of plaster, which was thick, white, and sticky like glue. Then the artist would carefully and slowly begin to put tesserae into place. In a shop or house, the tesserae might be little pieces of colored glass, stone, clay, or wood painted different colors. But in a beautiful church or palace, the tesserae were more likely to be bits of marble or pieces of silver. The mosaics in the Hagia Sophia are especially bright and shining because the artists who made them covered glass cubes with gold and made backgrounds of the mosaic pictures out of these glittering tesserae. Each glass cube was set into the plaster at a slightly different angle, so when the sun shines on the golden mosaics of the Hagia Sophia, light bounces off the pictures in all different directions. The pictures seem to glow in the light. Many people saw the mosaics in the Hagia Sophia because this church became the center of a whole group of Christians. Remember, after the fall of Rome, many Christians in the lands that had once belonged to the Roman Empire believed that the Pope was their leader. They believed that God had given him the job of looking after all Christians. But not all Christians agreed. Those Christians who lived in Constantinople, as well as many Christians who lived in Africa, Asia, and in the eastern part of the continent of Europe, didn't believe that the Pope should be able to make decisions for the whole church. Instead, they thought that the leaders of the churches in Jerusalem, Rome, Constantinople, and two other important cities should join together to make decisions, and that Christians everywhere would join in saying, "Yes, those decisions are right." This was a very different way to think about the Christian church. And as time went on, the Pope, who was in the west of Europe, and the leaders of the Christian church in the east disagreed more and more about how the church should be led. Finally, the Christian church divided into two groups. Those who continued to believe in the authority of the Pope became known as Roman Catholics. The Christians further east, including those in the Byzantine Empire, became known as Orthodox or Eastern Orthodox. Orthodox Christians called their leaders patriarchs. They had their own prayers and their own rites, ways of worshiping God. The Eastern Christians liked to tell stories about Christians from the past who had been faithful to God. One of these Christians was called Nicholas. Here is one story that the Christians of the Byzantine Empire told about Nicholas. Nicholas lived in Asia Minor. His parents were Christians, but they died when Nicholas was very young, leaving him lots of money. Now, in those days, a girl could not get married unless her father gave a gift of money to her husband. In the village where Nicholas lived was a very poor family with three daughters. Each girl was in love with a young man and wanted to get married, but their father had no money to give them. One cold, snowy night, Nicholas was walking by the house of this poor family when he heard a girl weeping. He stopped and came closer. There in the window sat one of the daughters, crying and crying. He came even closer until he could hear what she said. "Oh," the girl wept, "I will never be able to marry the man I love. My sisters and I will live here in poverty for the rest of our lives, and all because my father has no money." Nicholas couldn't bear to hear such sadness. He ran quickly home and gathered as many gold coins as he could find into a bag. Then he ran back through the snow to the house where the girl sat weeping. He didn't want anyone to know who had brought the gold, so he drew his arm back, aimed carefully, and threw the bag up into the top of the chimney. A moment later, he heard the girl exclaim, "Look, something has fallen into the fireplace. What is it?" And he crept away, satisfied that he had given the girl and her father money enough to arrange for her wedding. But later that night he thought, what about her two sisters? Suppose they wish to get married too. Who will pay the money for them? So the next evening, Nicholas returned with another bag of gold. Again he threw the bag down the chimney into the fireplace, and the next night he came back with a third bag of gold and did the same thing. The next spring, all three daughters were married. They wore beautiful gowns stitched with gold and wreaths of white flowers on their heads. Their father and mother danced together with joy at the wedding feast, and Nicholas watched, happy that his gift, given in secret, had brought so much happiness. As time went on, the story of Nicholas was told and retold by the Christians in the Byzantine Empire. Soon, Nicholas was called a saint, a person who has a special relationship with God. The Emperor Justinian built a cathedral to honor Saint Nicholas in Constantinople, and his story spread all over the world. In many countries, children get gifts on Saint Nicholas's special day, December 6th. Sometimes they put their shoes next to the door. In the morning, the shoes are filled with chocolate coins wrapped in gold foil to remind them of the gold Saint Nicholas gave to the three poor girls. Do you know that Saint Nicholas has another name? Sometimes he is called Santa Claus. The story of Santa Claus comes from the story of Saint Nicholas, a Christian from the Byzantine Empire.